It is really easy when reading Scripture to miss some important minor differences, to miss some details. It takes a lot of effort to keep up with some of the subtleties of our scriptural text. And one of those has to do with the Sabbath. If I were to say to most people, where does the Sabbath come from? Most people would say from the creation story in the first chapter of Genesis. You know, God rested on the seventh day. You might not remember that it's the first chapter of Genesis, but pretty much everybody remembers God rested on the seventh day. And that story was written by priests after the exile, attempting to reintegrate good religious practice into the life of ancient Israel. And so they had several important theological points to make with that story, and they ended it with Sabbath keeping. God rested on the seventh day, so should we. What's easily missed, though, is that the text we just heard from Deuteronomy doesn't say that. The text that we just heard from Deuteronomy says, you'll keep Sabbath because God redeemed you from slavery. It's a completely different metaphor for understanding the Sabbath. And it's important for us to notice that. The presence of texts that connect Sabbath to being liberated from slavery are interesting. And they have led scholars to speculate, and I think it's a reasonable assumption. They've led scholars to speculate that this comes from the exile itself, when the Israelites in exile told their Babylonian overlords, one day a week, we're not working. One day a week, we're not working for you. We may be captured, we may be your slaves, but one day a week, we're worshiping our God. So that in that concept, in that understanding, the tying of Sabbath to liberation is a kind of act of, in contemporary language, an act of resistance. An act of resistance. We're not going to toil for you 7 days a week. One day a week, we're keeping Sabbath. An act of resistance. And over the centuries, the full import of this one day a week rest and time for reflection and prayer and family and friends, the spiritual richness of that grew in the people's understanding. But it is interesting to conceive of Sabbath as a feast of liberation and an act of resistance. So what happens is we come to the gospel that we heard today, and the question before the gospel presented by these two stories is, what arguments do we make about the Sabbath? How do we handle it? What do we do? What is the nature of the Sabbath? And what is the nature of Jesus' relationship to the Sabbath? And so the scene opens, the first scene of our gospel reading is Jesus and his followers walking through a field, and they're plucking some grains and eating them because they're hungry. And he's asked, what are you doing? It's not lawful to do that. Why are you doing unlawful things? Now notice that the text says, why are you doing what's not lawful to do on the Sabbath? The text doesn't say, why are you eating? I've heard a lot of people misunderstand this text over the years. The problem is not that they were eating. The idea of Sabbath is that it's supposed to be a time of rest and stability, so you're not supposed to travel on the Sabbath. And because it's a time of rest, you're not supposed to work. Remember, one day a week, we're not working for you, Babylonian overlords. So one day a week is supposed to be a time of rest, and you're not supposed to harvest or glean on the Sabbath. Jesus reminds the Pharisees who ask him about that something that they already know, that Sabbath keeping is supposed to be for the good of human beings. Remember, starting as an act of resistance was for the good of the Israeli slaves in Babylon. So Jesus says, remember when David was in the temple and ate the bread of presence? And the story is one of David fleeing Saul. He's been on the run and he's exhausted. And he goes into the temple, which is a place of sanctuary where he can't be captured. And because he's hungry and wore out, the priest, and our gospel says Abiathar, but it was really Abimelech, they get the name wrong. Abimelech gives him some of the bread that is offered normally to the priests in the temple sacrifice. And the idea there is that you're supposed to feed people in distress who are hungry and tired. You're supposed to feed them. You're supposed to care for them. You're always supposed to feed the hungry traveler who shows up at your door. And so what's startling to Jesus' listeners about this is not the idea that hungry people should eat on the Sabbath. What's startling is the idea that this young upstart teacher that showed up from who knows where and is stirring everything up is equating himself with King David. Who does he think he is? That's what's startling about that story. Who does he think he is? And it's particularly disturbing when he knows the tradition, when he knows the law, when he knows the stories, when he knows they know that the Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. They know that. That's part of the tradition. The laws on the Sabbath say you can feed and tend your animals. The laws on the Sabbath say you should feed and tend your family and friends. The laws about the Sabbath say if somebody is a widow or a widower or alone in the community, you should invite them to your house for Sabbath so they have a family to have the Sabbath meal with. There's lots and lots and lots of laws about caring for other people on the Sabbath. The law even says you can provide critical medical care. Somebody has an acute medical problem, you can try to heal it or fix it. Now, here's the thing. Some also asserted if it's a chronic medical problem that's been around for a long time, you can wait till after the Sabbath to work on that. But Jesus doesn't agree with that legal ruling. So in the next story, he goes into the synagogue, and to start with, they're already not practicing good Sabbath keeping because they're being suspicious. They're watching him. Right? This is not the position, bodily or attitude-wise, for Sabbath keeping. So they're watching him to see what he'll do. And there's a man there with a withered hand. And Jesus asks them, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Now they know that it's lawful to heal on the Sabbath. They all know that. Somebody could have spoken up and said, yes, especially for a crisis. Somebody's spurting blood, you get to try to stop it. Maybe not so much the withered hand someone else might offer. And they could have engaged Jesus in a conversation. But no, everyone kept their mouth shut. And so Jesus tells him, stretch out your hand. And he does, and his hand is healed. And one of the things that Jesus is showing them is that the tricky part about deciding what you can and can't do on the Sabbath is figuring out where to look. Right? You can look at his withered hand and say, well, it's been withered a long time. It's likely to be withered a long time more. Let that wait till Sunday and then try to heal it. Except in that culture, if he can't get a job because of the withered hand, his whole family is hungry. And so Jesus takes the Sabbath rule about caring for others to its most radical, in the sense of rooted, place, and challenges the whole group to look a little deeper, to look a little wider, to look a little more pervasively. Because when we're acting suspicious, we only look a little bit into a problem. Only enough to confirm our worst suspicions. But Jesus understands all the way back to that first act of resistance that was Sabbath keeping. Jesus understands that his presence as the one who embodies all of God's love and all of God's directions about how we should live means that he is one who will look deeply into the matter. Take things as far as they will go on behalf of love and compassion. Will make healing happen wherever and whenever he goes. There was a saying that said, defile one Sabbath in order to help a person keep a lifetime of Sabbaths. It's a fascinating teaching. One that doesn't get picked up and reported in our scriptures. But it's that idea that Jesus was working on. And what he was doing was challenging people to live into what they really believed and to look a little deeper than their own prejudices or their own fatigue or their own whatever. In our own world, we look at everything that's going on in the world around us, and we get tired of the constant change, and we come to church and we want everything to be the same. The reality is, our job is to radically embody the faith for our age. And that might mean doing something different. That might mean change here too. It happens. First of all, you got this crazy priest. But what we're supposed to hold on to that doesn't change is the love that Christ has for us. What we're supposed to hold on to is the most radical part of our faith, the most rooted part, Christ's love for us. A love so profound that it challenges us to fully live into our faith and to really be radical about our faith. A love that challenges us to depend on him for the security and then to go out into the world and act boldly. To act on behalf of others. To be the presence of Christ's love for them. Jesus challenged his listeners in both of these stories. He challenged them with their own tradition. He challenged them to live what they really believed.